You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. If it was a TV miniseries, they might have called it Lining Up the Ducks in Denver. But the Democratic Party has put all of its internal narratives aside, its internal memos, and projected party unity over the last 3 days. And today, in the final day of the Democratic Convention in Denver, it's all about Barack Obama, who is now the official nominee of the Democratic Party, the first African-American to have the nominee of a major party in the United States. But there were speeches last night, and the settling of scores and the projection of unity was very much in evidence last night. And our live Takeaway Democratic National Convention coverage team, led by Takeaway Political Director Andrea Bernstein, is with us in Denver. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning.
The speeches really set to rest a couple of things. How much this campaign is going to focus on the issues and how much the Clintons are going to figure in the campaign process. What did you discover last night?
Oh, my God, John. Last night, such anxiety on the convention floor before Bill Clinton's speech. Now, people thought he would give a good supportive speech, but there was a huge question about how far he would go. And Bill Clinton is famous for rewriting speeches at the last minute. In one State of the Union, he was crossing it out in his limousine on the way from the White House to the Capitol. So I was told this did not happen last night, that his speech was written well in advance. But when he came on the stage, no one knew what he was going to say. Right out of the box, just like his wife, he said, "I'm for Barack Obama." And then he
did
something.
And that was when he could actually start talking, though, Andrea. I was really struck by that standing ovation and the continuing clapping that just seemed to go on for
on, like, 3 to 5 minutes.
The crowd would not let him talk. I was really struck by that enormous welcome that he was given.
No placards for Bill Clinton, just an American flags waving all over that floor. And then he offers this very high praise. He compares Obama to himself, Bill Clinton.
16 years ago, you gave me the profound honor to lead our party to victory and to lead our nation to a new era of peace and broadly shared prosperity. Together, we prevailed in a hard campaign in which the Republicans said I was too young and too inexperienced to be commander-in-chief.
Of course, we recall Bill Clinton was in a three-way field back then with Ross Perot, and he did actually call out to the hall, "Sound familiar, the inexperienced charge?" And it sounds like he answered it pretty well.
He went right into vouching for Barack Obama. He went through a long list of Barack Obama's accomplishments, and he sort of makes this argument that not only can he do all these things and does he have all the experience, but any way you look at it, he's better than the other guy.
He has a remarkable ability to inspire people, to raise our hopes and rally us to high purpose. He has the intelligence and curiosity every successful president needs. His policies on the economy, on taxes, on health care, on energy are far superior to the Republican alternatives.
Bill Clinton, of course, came down a few notches during the primary campaign when he got into trouble, or at least was caught being pretty candid about Barack Obama. Did you think, and Adora noted the standing ovation that he got at the beginning, do you think this restored his stature at all, this speech last night?
Absolutely, without doubt. There he was in a suit and tie. This is the Bill Clinton who's been going around the country in jeans, wagging his fingers at reporters and his face getting all pink. And there he was again, the elder statesman of the Democratic Party that everybody loved. And he made this speech, and, you know, I've seen a lot of his convention speeches, and there's a certain elegance to them. He sort of starts out, and it seems kind of simple, and then he kind of keeps circling back to this theme and building until he creates this sort of, you know, he kind of opens the door on his vision for America. And last night he said that America didn't really understand how bad the Republican philosophy was until 2001. And then he sort of lays out this dystopia if McCain were to be reelected and all of the things that would be horrible. Here are a few of them.
More Band-Aids for health care that will enrich insurance companies, impoverish families, and increase the number of uninsured. More going it alone in the world instead of building the shared responsibilities and shared opportunities necessary to advance our security and restore our influence. They actually want us to reward them for the last 8 years by giving them four more.
You know, actually, this is about the only thing I really pay attention to at conventions, the taglines.
It even got your attention?
That was a good tagline.
Saying something.
And Joe Biden also was responsible for delivering the takeaway lines, I suppose, from this convention. How did he do?
You know, he did what vice presidents do, which is to stand up there, vice presidential candidates, I should say, stand up there and just throw out the red meat and lay out all the reasons why the other guy is horrible. And he started going after McCain right out of the box, going through all of these ways that Americans are worse off now than they were 8 years ago. He said people can't afford their medical bills, they can't afford college, they can't keep their home. And then he said,
"That's the America we'll continue to get if John McCain is elected president of the United States of America." Freudian slip. Freudian slip.
You mean Machiavellian slip.
You mean Freudian script.
Yeah. Right. Well, more Machiavellian than Freudian. I mean, the Democrats really hope that they can keep this fusion of McCain and Bush going. Do you think they're going to be able to do that?
Well, I mean, Biden was really, you know, that's really what he was doing. And, you know, throughout the course of his speech, there were so many placards. I mean, they were just piling up all over people's chairs, and it was already so crowded. First, there was this tall red one that said Biden. Then there was one that said the change. No, then it said McCain, more of the same. So that's bad. Then the change we need, a little bit of adjustment to the Barack Obama slogan. And then finally, Obama, Biden, new leadership. Biden said McCain is my friend, but he says McCain's Senate career has been a series of bad decisions. He said he voted against a minimum wage hike, he voted against equal pay for women, and that he voted against all sorts of things that Democrats and working people should believe in.
And when he says he'll continue to spend $10 billion a month, when the Iraqis have a surplus of nearly $80 billion, that's not change. That's more of the same.
There, and that's the line. That's the Biden line. That's not
change.
There's
the chanting we've been waiting for.
More of
the same. We're going to be hearing more of that, I'm sure.
But, you know, I guess, is it possible without getting too giddy to go over what was really a remarkable moment at the convention last night? And that was the actual illusion of spontaneity in the roll call vote that Hillary Clinton managed to pull off.
I would argue that it actually was spontaneous and that even you would have been gripped by the drama of the moment. What happened is 1:30 in the afternoon here, so we're about 2 hours earlier,
right.
June O'Neill, who's the head of the Democratic Party in New York, gets an email from the Clinton campaign. It says, gather all the delegates at 3:15 on the convention floor. So that's 5:15.
And at this point, we should point out, everybody thought it was just going to be a regular old roll call vote, right?
At night. That's when it usually is,
right.
At night, during the regular primetime thing. But nope, everybody had to rush down to the floor. And then about 4 o'clock, the states start voting, and each state starts saying, you know, the great state of Delaware, the great state of Arizona, so forth and so on, all these wonderful things. And there's people calling each other over the floor and, you know, back and forth and trying to get the timing right. And at one point, New York passed back to Illinois because Hillary Clinton wasn't quite there. And then she came down to the New York State delegation and she said this.
Madam Secretary, I move that the convention suspend the procedural rules and suspend the further conduct of the roll call vote. All votes cast by the delegates will be counted. And that I move Senator Barack Obama of Illinois be selected by this convention by acclamation as the nominee of the Democratic Party.
And pandemonium breaks out. People start crying. Hillary Clinton supporters because of what she's just done, and Barack Obama supporters because after all of this time, there it is. He is finally the nominee, the first African-American nominee of a major party for the president of the United States. And tears are streaming down their face.
Well, one of the things that is kind of remarkable here is, first of all, they didn't ask for ayes or nays. The acclamation was just presumed to be unanimous. But, you know, these delegate chairs, this is their moment in the sun to say from the great state of Idaho, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they did have to get a lot of agreement for these people who had traipsed all the way out to Denver not to have their moment.
And that's what's been going on in the last few days. But it, you know, the sense of, like, people knew that Barack Obama was going to be nominated, but the how remained a question until right before it happened, was really a moment of convention drama. And I would argue, John, the kind of news story that even you would love.
Even I would love. Well, tonight there is a real news story, and you got to go outside for it. At the stadium, Barack Obama will give his speech accepting the nomination. You'll be there. Andrea Bernstein, takeaway political director, on the whole team. We'll see you there tomorrow. Thanks, guys. They left early.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.